you don't drown by falling in the pool. You drown by staying there. So if something bad happens to you, you really need to get out of that pool and go and get on with life.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. An Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hello, it's Anne Nelson, your host for today's show. The GFC that hit the world back in 2007 is still being felt by the ones that were badly affected at that time. And it is just marvelous to meet someone that has survived and has moved on from the terrible consequences that some of us faced back in then. What a terrible feeling to wake up and have all of your wealth gone in a matter of a short time. And that can happen to anyone. When we retire, it's not about what your portfolio is worth, I suppose, as much as what it is worth on that particular time that you want to retire. When we have all our eggs in the one basket, it sometimes just doesn't work out. One way to make the money go further is to find somewhere else to live that is cheaper and can let the money last longer. I'm really pleased to introduce today's guest, who has had a few careers, mainly in real estate, and then after the GFC, he and his wife had a time living over in Thailand. So he's going to come and talk to us today about surviving and not losing heart. Jeff Wilkin is a fellow of the Real Estate Institute of Australia and has had to reinvent himself on a couple of occasions, and he's here to share part of his story with us today. So welcome to the show, Jeff Wilkin. How are you today, Jeff?
And I'm fantastic. It's been raining here in Adelaide for the last week or so, and today we have a predicted temperature of 23 degrees, so it's going to be a great day.
As a way of introduction, I believe you've retired a couple of times and now you're a bit of a roamer. So can you just give us a bit of a background to where you started from and where you are now?
The road to anywhere is full of ups and downs. If you want to drive from down to the Cairns, you're going to go up and down hills. If you want to buy shares, the shares are going to go up and down. And life is exactly the same way. It'd be lovely if your life was just one simple upward going line, but mine has been full of peaks and troughs, or not necessarily full of peaks and troughs. I've had three major peaks and three major troughs, and it's been fun getting out of the troughs.
You've got a background in real estate, haven't you? So where were you, when you were doing your real estate?
I was born into a real estate family. My mother was one of the first fully licensed female real estate agents in Australia. And my father and grandfather, for that matter, were in the building industry. So it was just a matter of progression that as soon as I left school, I went to night school and studied real estate. And as soon as I possibly could, I got into the industry. And I started in Melbourne, moved to Adelaide, where I was probably one of the oldest office boys in the world at about 21, but it was a very old traditional firm. And moved around with various companies, came back to that old established in 1898 company along with one of my colleagues there, and we eventually bought the firm and we built it through the late 60s and early 70s into the third largest real estate firm in South Australia at the time, which was a pretty good effort because franchising hadn't been invented. So all of the 8 offices we had were our own. And that's about when the first retirement came in. I looked at my life in Adelaide and I found that each week was a repeat of the week before. We had 3 school-aged children, Fran and I, and life was becoming boring. And I had, as a child and a teenager, moved around a lot. My mother was with a national real estate firm and she was transferred around the country a lot. So I had the wanderlust in me. And during a caravan trip to Noosa Heads, we all fell in love with it. And long story short, in 1978, we moved to Noosa Heads and retired at the age of, ripe old age of 36. In hindsight, you can't retire at 36. I don't play golf. I don't play bowls. My hobby is, was in those days my family, but you know, they're all grown up now. So it wasn't long before I drifted back into working again.
Right. For my overseas listeners, so Noosa is on the Sunshine Coast in southeast Queensland, and it's one of the warmer places in Australia, and there's a lot of people retiring there now.
Yes, it is a haven. It's a hangout for especially Melbourne people during the winter. Population seems to double. It's a beautiful place. And like all people who love Noosa, it was always better 20 years ago when it was far smaller. But Noosa has the in people there. There's a saying that the quickest way to become a millionaire in Noosa is to arrive with 10 million. And I sort of proved that. I went up with a decent amount of cash backing, and we built a lovely house on the beach and all of that. And then because I didn't have any hobbies and I got back into real estate and building again, I found that building in those days, especially building South Australian design homes, which were selling quite well in South Australia, didn't sell that well in the tropics. And lo and behold, my cash reserves dwindled down over a period of about 3 or 4 years. And in 1981, Noosa hit a brick wall. I say that real estate was so bad in 1981, you couldn't sell a ticket in a raffle for a piece of real estate. So there I was, less than a millionaire.
Right. Well, it's been an interesting journey that you went on. So is this leading up to your second reinvention?
Yes, Anne. I've got a saying, and I've used it and told many, many people for years, you don't drown by falling in the pool. You drown by staying there. So if something bad happens to you, you really need to get out of that pool and go and get on with life. I know there's a far older saying, and it's a theme for a song, every cloud has a silver lining. And if you look at every disadvantage, you'll usually find an advantage behind it. You know, you don't make mistakes, you create experiences. So using those sorts of philosophies, yes, we had a furnishing business which also was involved in the fall over, but we went home, we set it all up on our kitchen table. We'd done some research as to actually where the business for the furnishing company came from, and it was from out of town. So we started to market the business. Most people on the Sunshine Coast and the Gold Coast, for example, a lot of buyers from interstate and overseas and up in the bush buy an apartment there, and they need to get it fully furnished. So we almost invented the furnishing package system, and here it is now, 1980 to 2016, you know, some 36 years later, the furnishing business, the family furnishing business is running extremely well. It's very, very big and under the control of our daughter.
Ah, very good.
One way out of the pool. And I all the time still worked along in real estate. I was a freelance auctioneer. I did some local work as a general manager of various companies around the place and advisories. I did some private selling. And then the next big crash, I suppose, came with the GFC. We once again had retired, I think this time for the third time. But we'd made a mistake, or I'd made a mistake. I shouldn't say we. I'd made a mistake where all of our businesses, all of our streams of income were related in one way or the other back to real estate. Now, the real estate business, and for example, our furnishing business sold properties, furnished properties that had been sold. And if the GFC knocked over all the sales, we weren't making sales and we weren't making furniture sales. So suddenly those two streams of income stopped. And to compound it, our super fund was based on trading in the American stock market, because that's where the subprime problem started, and the American stock market crashed by, over 50%. So our super fund went out the window as well. So there we are at the age of sort of like 66 or 67, no income and no savings. So one had to get out of the pool and shake oneself up and get on with it again.
Right. And for those listeners, the super fund you're talking about is our tax system in Australia, where we're allowed to put money away for our retirement. And we call that super or superannuation. In America, I think they call it 401ks or another name. But this is where you're referring to your money that you'd put away for your retirement.
That's correct, Dan. Employees in Australia, by law, have an amount of money equivalent to 9.5% of their income deposited by their employer into a superannuation fund. And most employees, and this is sort of leading up to the problem that I want to take a part in solving, most employees think that that's great. I've got 9.5% extra being put away for me. And when I get to 65, although it's not going to be 65 for much longer, I can retire and live off that money. Well, folks, I hate to tell you, but 9.5% of your income, even if you start at 21, isn't going to amount to enough money for you to retire on at 65. So you need to take more of an interest in your retirement fund.
Yep.
Because, like I said, and the Australian government have just announced over a period of the last few months that they're now going to, over a period of some years, increase the retirement age from 65 to 70. And by the retirement age, I mean the time when you're eligible, if you are eligible, to begin to collect the government pension, the aged pension.
Yes.
Well, I go back enough in time. Ladies used to be able to collect it at 60. They could do a pensionable age at 60. They could get the government pension. But these days, that's been increased to 65. So, retirees in Australia, they sort of have two sources of funds when they get to retirement age. One is the compulsory superannuation, and the other is the government pension. And there's probably a third, which is whatever money you've saved yourself for your retirement.
And that's the problem here in Australia too, or for anywhere. When you're working for yourself, it's not compulsory to put money away for your retirement for yourself if you're the boss, so to speak. So it's up to us all. And it's getting harder to qualify for the age pension in Australia too. So it's really up to us to make sure that we are creating some additional income streams for ourselves. So moving on now, you have faced many challenges. So what's your recipe for going forward? What have you discovered?
Well, as much as I believe in that philosophy I mentioned two or three times so far, you don't drown by falling in the pool, you drown by staying there. I have got out of the pool a number of times, but now I'm in my early 70s. When the global financial crisis arrived, I was around about 66 or 67, and suddenly with no money. And at 66 or 67, pretty hard to start a new business. You know, you look at Colonel Sanders and a few other examples, but hello, we're not all that fortunate. I had to look at other ways of either making money easily or less physically, and secondly, avoiding expenses going out. So, you look at both the money coming in and you've got to look at the money going out. Now, Australia, if I'm not correct, I apologise, but I believe Australia is quite possibly the most expensive country in the world in which to live. We've recently moved from Adelaide to Brisbane to Adelaide, and I've noticed that food here, for example, is dearer than in Brisbane. And I think that if you're retired on the pension, the couple's pension in Australia is $1,200 a fortnight, $600 a week. Now, that sort of sounds like a fair amount of money, but in fact, it doesn't go very far at all. So 4 or 5 years ago, we started to look at overseas living. I mentioned quite earlier that I have a very large dose of wanderlust. I don't really like staying in one place for too long. So we've looked at a number of Asian countries, but we've particularly settled over the last couple of years on Thailand. And I have kept spreadsheets of every dollar I spent while I was living up there. Brad and I lived up there for over a year. And you can live quite comfortably as a couple in Thailand for or even less than the Australian age pension. There's a lot of rumours around about you don't get the pension when you move overseas, or you don't get all the pension, or this or that. I suggest, don't take my word for it, but go and check what pensions you can and may be eligible for overseas. But if you're eligible for the full pension, most people who have worked in Australia for over 35 years are. There's a number of countries. It doesn't necessarily have to be Thailand. There are countries in Europe, in Asia, in Central and South America that you can live like a king and queen for the pension.
Where in particular did you live in Thailand?
We lived in our investigative years. We looked at Pattaya or Pattaya, which is probably the heart of the epicenter of real estate sales because it's the tourist capital of Pattaya, and that's what interested me in the first place. We also looked at Wah Hin, which is on the western side of the Gulf of Thailand, a beachside suburb. And then we looked at a few other cities, but the main one that we looked at in the country was Chiang Mai. Chiang Mai ranks in the top 4 or 5 cities in Thailand. No one really knows what size it is because no one really does an accurate census up there. But Thailand is something like 700 kilometres, sorry, not Chiang Mai is something like 700 kilometres north of Bangkok. It's in the mountains. It's a little bit cooler than the rest of Thailand. Very old, 700-year-old city, lovely place to be, and that's where, at the time, we decided to settle, and we were staying there. And I use the word staying with a bit of emphasis because there is staying and then there's living, and at some point you cross that line, and we had our plans that after a year of being up there, we went up in December 2016, that in November or December this year, we would return, complete selling up what we had in Australia, and then move back to Thailand to live, as distinct from staying. But we never got there because, as I mentioned earlier, when we were chatting, my wife became ill, and although I have a great amount of confidence in the Thai health system, it's world class. When you've got something serious, I don't speak Thai. And although Thai doctors quite often speak English, when you get into technical things, especially about your health. So we decided to opt out. So we had an 8-hour flight back to Australia. We decided to opt out and come back here and sort of regather our forces again.
Right. Was it easy to live in Thailand for that long? Do they welcome expats? And could you get a visa for a year, or how did you managed to stay there for a year?
Thailand has what's colloquially known as a retirement visa. It's a one-year visa. You need to establish the fact that you can afford to be there. And an interesting fact about Thailand is it's never been conquered and it's never been a colony. So the Thai way of life, the Thai way of doing things is the Thai way of doing things. And it sometimes seems illogical to us. For example, I started to get together to apply for my visa, my long-term visa, while I was in Thailand. But it proved to be difficult. The requirements in Thailand were strange and, to me, archaic. But as I said, they do things their way. So we came back to Australia. I contacted the Brisbane consulate, but they said, sorry, we don't do retirement visas here. I happened to be in Melbourne a couple of months later. They said, no, we don't do retirement visas here. You need to go to Sydney or the embassy. in Canberra. So I thought, well, Sydney would be the easier one. Well, I went to Sydney and approached them, and they gave me a set of conditions which I knew were incorrect. But you can't argue with Thai people. You can't argue with Thai bureaucracy. I knew they were incorrect. I politely said, could you please check this other method? And they said, no, definitely you must do it our way. So I then went to the embassy, and the embassy in Canberra, which of course must be the, you know, the spot, said, oh, no, your way is quite good. And by the way, a couple of other silly little things we have in here about, you end up with about 100 pages of information to give the embassy. And the rule says that you must take all this to a commissioner for taking affidavits. There's normally a solicitor in charges. That commissioner must staple or bind all the documents himself and sign every page. That can cost you $200 or $300 to get that done, and you've got to go and spend a lot of time. But when I was talking to him, he said, just take it down to your local JP, put a paperclip around it. We're happy. So like a lot of things in life, if you actually get to talk almost face-to-face with people, a lot of things will be made easy. But the point I'm saying is that it is easy if you've got there's a financial requirement. You either have to have savings or income. And pretty well, if you're getting the pension, if you're getting the married pension, you are very, very close to meeting the Thai requirement.
Okay. Well, thanks for explaining that. And just quickly, did you enjoy living there? And were you mainly mixing with the locals, or was there a big expat community that you could mix with?
All of the above, Anne. We found a place, a guest house, it's actually a block of apartments, but they call it a guest house. It was about 114 rooms and apartments, very centrally situated in Chiang Mai, and it was mainly occupied by expats. And I keep referring to the magnificent or Marigold Hotel or whatever that film was, based in India, the retired people staying there.
Yes.
Well, very, very similar to that, certainly not in architecture. But there was a veranda, a little veranda at the front of the hotel, and a little bar behind it. About 4 or 5 o'clock every afternoon, about a dozen or so of us would gather there and we'd talk and chat, you know, exchange ideas. And so we got our dose of worldly information, and it was great for planning, you know, future travels. There is a very large expat club in Thailand. There's a large number of Thai expat clubs all over the place. And plenty of expats there. So if you want to live the expat lifestyle, you can. You don't hardly need to speak to a Thai person at all. We wanted to mix both. I mean, so we have some friends that have moved to Thailand, and they're virtually living a totally Australian lifestyle in Thailand, which is good for them, but I couldn't do it. If I'm in Thailand, you'll never be a Thai, and you'll never live the Thai way. But you need to, I think, blend in more with the society. And which is what we do. We've got a number of great Thai friends who showed us things and explained things to us. And we were very fortunate that when the Thais suffered the death of their king, and the king was a very, very revered man, we were in Thailand at the time, and one of our friends was quite into any events that marked as a memorial for the king. So we met a lot of Thai people then. There were very few expats involved in a lot of the memorial functions. We were, and we loved it. And, yeah, it's easy to live in Thailand.
Well, thank you. Sounds like you really enjoyed your experience over there. So can you give me some tips to how you have coped with reinventing yourself and getting to retirement age and having your savings wiped out? What can people do to pick themselves up and go forward in this modern world?
Pretty hard to give a specific answer to such a broad question, but it really is, if I can refer to another maybe cliche, you know, persistence will overcome everything. If we think of the dripping water on the rock, over a period of maybe 100 years or even 1,000 years, that water will wear a hole through the rock. So don't stay down, get up and look around. And so people should really set themselves up during their working life to have at least 4 streams of income. One can be your job. One can be your 9.5% government compulsory super fund. But you really need to have another two forms of income. Robert Kiyosaki wrote a number of great books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I forgot the name of the next one, but it explains the benefits of moving from an employee to an investor. So you move from an employee to become a small business owner, a large business owner in the form of shares or something like that. And then the fourth one, the ideal one, was where your money actually works for you. So multi-level marketing is a great way. We had two multi-level marketing businesses during the GFC, and both of them not only survived, but both of them actually increased their returns. You know, I'm not talking fortunes, but there was a dribble of reasonably good money coming in from both of these MLMs. Some people sort of say, oh, MLM, you wouldn't want to be in one of those. But I can say that having been around that industry for 30-odd years, it's particularly good. But some home-based businesses, there's lots of things these days you can do on your computer. I've got a very good friend, he's just had his 80th birthday, and he takes surveys. He's joined up about six or seven survey companies, and he's telling me he's collecting about $70 to $100 a week. When you look at the single pension, it's something like $350 a week. If you can pick up another $70 to $100 a week, you've got a really good addition to your income.
Yeah.
And he lives, you know, here in Australia. But if he lived in Thailand, he could live quite well on his income of probably about $400 a week. Very well. Right? Set yourself up early to have these streams of income. There's the other factor that being an old man, but being 74 is probably considered to be old. I have a great long memory of things. I can quite easily remember coupons, food coupons after the war. But a bit to look up before this conversation, when we brought in GST into Australia, but it was some time ago. I'm guessing it was 20 years ago. If you were any younger than 20 years ago, you wouldn't know before GST. You wouldn't know all the other taxes we had. And then something like 20 years ago, the government brought in GST, and they were supposed to, states were supposed to throw out a number of other taxes. Mm. They got a bit forgetful after throwing out some of them, and some of the old taxes still remain. Plus, we had GST, 10% on most things. If you're younger than 40, you probably don't remember anything about pre-GST. It's there. But it was one way of the government getting more money out of it. Governments, Western governments, the Australian government, we'll just talk about, the Australian government is a Ponzi scheme. If you don't know what a Ponzi scheme is, Google it. But a Ponzi scheme is a scheme where the promoter, in this case, let's call it the government, has to pay out more money than it gets in legitimately. So it has to find ways of dragging in money from other places to pay what it's paying out. And there's no doubt that taxes, charges, fees and levies are going to increase. They're increasing every year. We just recently saw the banks are now going to have a levy put on them for deposits. That'll get trickled down to the people. We're looking at power and heating costs going up. I mentioned earlier, Australia is considered to be one of the most expensive countries in the world to live in. I can see the change over 50, 60 years that's happened. And younger people today, they accept the fact that they've got high taxes, but they don't necessarily understand them as being really high taxes. They just say, oh, that's the norm. So my warning is make sure you have secured your own future, because I haven't got that much confidence that in 20 or 30 years' time there'll be such a thing as a pension.
Yeah. So
the government's going to run out of money.
So the message is we have to provide for ourselves.
Yes, we're expecting the states, when I say we, the majority of people, I would suggest here, expect the states to be our nanny. From cradle to grave, you know, the government will fix it. Oh, no, the government would never allow that to be bad, or the government would never allow this to happen to me. Well, it will, and it does. So don't trust the government. I mean, I don't care what degree of government, what colour or brand of government is your favourite. You can bet your bottom dollar they want to get their hands into your pocket.
So we need to provide for ourselves, and we need to have multiple streams of income to protect ourselves from a downturn in any particular industry. So to finish up now, How do you help people?
We have a Facebook page and we will shortly have a website where we invite people, who are, in this particular case, we're just specialising in living overseas. If you're living overseas and have some experiences that you want to share, send them to us. We'll get them out to people. We're great followers and we advise everybody we can to follow International Living. It's a company, a publishing company based in Ireland that produce magazines, real life, hold in your hand magazines. They produce e-cards and e-zines on retiring overseas. And every day almost, they have a write-up from somebody who successfully retired overseas. And I mentioned before, there are countries in Europe. Portugal is a very cheap country to live in, lovely country. The weather's great. Not that difficult to get a long-term visa. Spain, even Italy, that's a bit more expensive. If you're a couple, you need to have that $80,000 in the bank to prove you've got the money to stay there. But you can stay there. You can get a retirement visa. We've mentioned Thailand. Certainly Cambodia is very easy to live in visa-wise. Malaysia have an excellent retirement scheme. You get discounts on almost anything from cars to going to the movies. Being an elderly person, it's a little bit more expensive than some of the other Asian countries to live in, but being an ex-British colony, well accepted. And then you can move across to anywhere from Mexico to Colombia to Ecuador. Excellent retirement programs, great weather. So the decisions people have to make, the hard decisions they have to make is, A, overcoming the fear of leaving Australia because it's a lovely, safe country. B is leaving your family. And if I could be a little bit cruel to be kind here, when was the last time you saw your grandchildren? I know in our particular case, Fran and I, we have three children and two grandchildren. But Fran's parents decided to move from New Guinea to where we were living in Melbourne. And they'd hardly arrived and I decided to move to Adelaide. So a year or two later, they moved to Adelaide. A few years go past, we moved to Noosa. Well, by that time, Brad's father had passed, but Brad's mother then moved to Queensland. So the point I'm making is that don't necessarily stay in one place purely for your family because they move. At the moment, we have one of our daughters living here in Adelaide. One lives in Brisbane. Our son lives in Brisbane, but travels all over the world with his job and could move tomorrow. We have two grandchildren, as I said. One is just going off to university in Canberra early next year. So sometimes if your family tends to be one of the moves, it's a bit futile to stay there. You know, when was the last time you saw your grandchildren, as I said? it could be months ago. And money, well, one of the things we've been talking about here is that if you've got, I don't put an exact figure on it, but you don't have to have too much in the way of savings to pick your life up and go and live in one of these countries. Very handy, of course, if you've got a partner, so you've got at least someone to talk to in the meantime, but it's easy to assimilate, cheap to live, great knowledge widener, experience is fabulous. I suggest look after your retirement, and even if you've got plenty of money, think about retiring overseas. If you don't have plenty of money, still think about retiring overseas.
Well, that's great advice. So it's all about how much goes out as well as how much you've got coming in. Thank you very much, Jeff. And if people wanted to get in touch with you, if they needed some advice about retiring overseas, how would they get in touch with you?
It's easy. Our email address is retireoverseas@wilkinwisdom.com. Retireoverseas, all one word. At Wilken is W-A-L-K-E-N. I emphasize the E because a lot of people put an I there. And wisdom is wisdom. So retireoverseas@wilkinwisdom.com. Send us an email if you've got some questions. We'll do the best we can to answer them. We're not financial advisors, but we can point you in the right direction. And Google retiring overseas.
Okay. Thank you.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.